Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul. I guess that's who I am.
It is.
I wonder sometimes. Tonight, we're going to continue our study on the central and divine universe. What a beautiful universe. And we're on section 14, section 1, paragraph 10. And that's where we'll start out tonight. Let's say a quick prayer and we'll get started. Father, thank you for the wonderful privilege of studying this revelation. We thank you for your many blessings on our life, but we really especially thank you for this one. It has enriched our lives so greatly, there's just not words to express it. It really isn't. We thank you for the ability to come together like this and study together and share each other's thoughts and answer each other's questions and ask each other's questions and somehow try to spread this divine revelation out a little further, and that we might share this with our friends and relatives and they might be enlightened along with us. We thank you and we give you the praise in your son Michael, Jesus of Nazareth, and the local universe Mother Spirit. We can't forget the Mother Spirit. Amen.
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 All right. I sent everybody a video out. Did y'all see the Gary Tong's video, a link to his video?
Yeah.
Did y'all see that?
It's a good video.
Together real well.
Yeah, it's very nice. Did a great job on that. Yeah. I wanted to do that, so I've seen it a long time ago when it first came out. But I wanted y'all to see that so you could get the more of an idea when we were talking about the scale of things and how huge all these things are, right? Mm-hmm. Especially the seven rings of Hamona, how all the planets get larger and larger as you go in towards paradise, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, and when you see a video like that, it really brings it home, doesn't it?
Hey Roger, he came out with a new video too. You might want to check that out, the local universe. Yes.
Oh, okay.
And he goes into my you may have just proved your theory. Yeah, I believe it's on the local universe, and it's just amazing. Gary Tong is just so amazing.
Yeah, he's done some really good work. His pictures have been around for a long, long time. All right, let me see the order here. Ed, would you like to start us out tonight on 110 there?
Certainly.
No, we're on 111. I'm sorry. We're in 111. I'm sorry, not 110.
All right, we're at 1.11.
Right.
Okay. Time is not reckoned on paradise. The sequence of successive events is inherent in the concept of those who are indigenous to the Central Isle. But time is germane to the Harvona circuits and to the numerous beings of both celestial and terrestrial origin sojourning thereon. Each Harvona world has its own local time, determined by its circuit. All worlds in a given circuit have the same length of year, since they uniformly swing around paradise, and the length of these planetary years decreases from the outermost to the innermost circuit.
Okay, so the point here is this: time is not reckoned on paradise. In other words, there is no time in paradise, but they sense the sequence of events. Okay, so their idea of time is just the sequence of how things happen in order, right? Just like we have an innate ability to reckon sequences of events that happen to us, right? Okay, right. So the first circuit outside, let me get a picture up here. The first Hamona circuit, since it's closer to paradise and the sacred spheres, that's the year for that circuit is going to be different than the next circuit, okay?
Right.
Because it's farther away, right? So it takes longer for the second circuit to go around paradise than it does the first circuit, right? Okay,
correct.
Now keep in mind, like I've said about these pictures before, this is not exactly accurate. If you saw that video I sent you, you know that each one of these planets are bigger as they go out, Okay, and there's more of them on each one of the circuits. So these worlds get larger and larger and larger, right? No, Roger, you're backwards again. They get smaller as they go out, right? I'm telling y'all backwards again. First circuit, the first Havona circuit that's closest to paradise is the largest, right?
Correct.
And as you go out, they get smaller, right? The planets. Mm-hmm. But the amount of the planets, the amount of them changes with each circuit, right?
Right.
Okay, so didn't want to confuse y'all. So go in, the planets get bigger. By the time you get to the sacred spheres here of the Father, Son, and Spirit, these things are enormous, gigantic, you know, beyond our concept. Okay, now, another point I want to make, too, is when we leave, you know, if you go outside the second, seventh circuit, and when we leave from Uversa is huge, too, right? So it kind of gets us ready for the first circuits when we get here, right, from the seventh circuit there. All right, so if you looked at this in the opposite direction, as you go in this way, the planets actually enlarge, right?
Right.
You follow me?
Hey, Roger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Question. What would be the definition of a circuit? Because notice how they're showing one planet and they're labeling that a circuit. So it's those, that line, that stream of those planets are called a circuit?
It's a circuit. It's a circle around, it's actually an oblong circle around paradise and the paradise bodies, right? The circuit is just the pathway that these celestial bodies follow. Okay.
Okay.
Just like if you think about it,
pearls on a string.
The Earth has a circuit around the Sun, does it not?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It goes in a circuit. It goes in a circle. So it has its own circuit. So each one of our planets has their own what? Circuit.
But okay, they only have you.
One planet. All right. Okay.
Do the number, there's something about the number of these planets either increase or decrease as they move out. And I can't remember because I know it's in here somewhere.
Yeah. It increased. The number. I can't
remember which way it is, but there.
Yeah, the number increases as you go in.
Okay.
Why is that backwards? Am I telling y'all backwards again?
No, I'm going to try to find it.
I may be telling you backwards.
The numbers of the planets in each circuit increase the further out you are from paradise.
Increase. That's right. That's right.
The number of planets increase. Is that what you said?
Yes. That's right. Yeah. If we go to the Havona, the topical index. It talks about the first circuit here. The first Havona circuit has 35 million worlds. Okay. And then as you go in.
Oh, that's really helpful.
Okay. Wow. On the seventh circuit.
I've seen it.
On the second circuit has 245 million worlds. So if we go to here, the second, seventh circuit.
Seven.
Let's go back.
It increases as it goes out, like Bill said. Okay.
Right. It increases as it goes out. So this is the seventh circuit. According to the it's 245 million worlds. Mm-hmm. Okay. The first circuit.
Got 35 million.
Has 35 million worlds, quite a difference, right?
Yeah.
So there's less as you go in, but keep in mind, the planets get larger as you go in too, right?
Okay.
And it starts from the seventh to the first, correct?
Yeah, it starts on the seventh, goes to the first.
In the first. Okay. So the first one would be really major, much bigger than the seventh.
Massive.
Wow.
Okay.
Let me ask you this. When Ed read, he said is germane. Time is germane to the bonus of Numis, both celestial and terrestrial origin. What are they referring to? I know the terms, but what are they referring to? The celestial and the terrestrial.
Terrestrial. Okay, when you talk about celestial origin, those are celestial beings. In other words, those are created beings that are like angels, but they're not angels. They're higher than angels. They're created beings perfectly celestial beings. Terrestrial beings are beings like us because they're physical and they have their origin in a planet.
Right.
Okay. Now, keep in mind, there are terrestrial origin beings that are even all the way to paradise that are created as terrestrial beings, not celestial. Okay. They may have function that's totally different than any other function that we know of. That's why they don't tell a lot about them. But there's billions of functions that go on in paradise and Havona that we have no conceived concept of. And there's no way to for them to explain it to us because we have nothing to relate it to. Okay. So it would be like a blind man trying to explain what the ocean looks like, right? Because if you're blind, you have no senses to realize what it would look like, right?
Right.
Same thing. So these terrestrial origin beings that they're talking about are probably perfectly created terrestrial beings, just like the celestial beings. Mm-hmm. Follow me?
They are. They're eventuated and perfected. I mean,
that's right.
Anyway. Yeah. That's a definition.
Yeah. Okay. And that's the difference between the two. Now, I would think that the terrestrial origin beings would not be beings that would be able to move about above paradise or Havona or any of the planets without some sort of motivation, some sort of, you know, I don't know what you call it, car or, a, you know, something to move them around. The celestial beings, however, would be able to negotiate time and space. In other words, would be able to fly. You follow me?
Yeah, I got you. Terrestrial. I'm the only one. Or Roger, you're really cutting out bad. Am I the only one that's not hearing you? The rest of y'all hear
that? Yeah, I can hear that too, Mike. Where he cuts in and out.
Maybe not be working as well as the other one was.
Mine's okay. I'm not talking that much though.
Yeah, Diane, you're great.
Diane,
let me see if I can get it a little better.
Yeah, we just bought new microphones. We buy new microphones about every month.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
I keep changing them out trying to get a good sound. This is supposed to have a dual mic, and that's why I printed this one.
Your microphone last week was great. You had a full timbre in your voice. This one here sort of sounds like Penny.
The only thing is because we're sharing the same space. Once again.
It might be. Hang on. Yeah. If y'all don't mind me taking a 1 minute break, I'll swap out my mic.
Cool.
Yeah. No, not at all. Go ahead. Yeah.
Not at all.
Y'all argue among yourselves about something. Okay.
He turned this one off.
Nothing personal.
Yeah. Yes. No, I was just going to make a side comment that it's interesting how Kepler's laws of dynamics of planetary motion are followed by these planets. As you take a look at how they move toward paradise.
What was Kepler's?
The German astrophysicist, he had three laws of planetary motion.
Really? Okay.
And he talks about how fast objects would move around a gravity point, the sun. Also that the path is not exactly a circle, it's an ellipse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's similar like an electron around a nucleus.
Exactly. There you go. Or at least in the models where you have a solid electron. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's fascinating too about the 30s is that, you know, the repertoires were trying to get our science
theory of Nicholas Copernicus.
Oh yeah.
Okay, sure. Can y'all hear me a little better now?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, you sound better.
Much better.
Yeah. Sound better? Maybe because we're on different frequencies.
Okay.
Well, we learn. We learn as we go. That's right.
Here.
Okay. Refund. And I heard something about Ed was talking about the ellipse of the solar system. You know, that's the model for everything in the super universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not circular, it's an ellipse, everything, right?
What do they mean by that?
It's longer on the north-south end than it is on the east-west.
Okay.
Right.
That's the reason that the moon right now is closest to the Earth in its rotation.
Bingo.
We have a big moon currently. The pink moon.
Mm-hmm. Do our 21st century scientists believe that, or is it something different, or are they against it, or
it's a fact.
Okay.
Yeah. not only do the planets but also satellites move in elliptical orbits,
right? And anything that goes around the planet.
Right. Kepler found this out. He was between 1609 and 1619.
Yep. Yeah. That's the one.
Yep.
Yeah. It's amazing what we've come around to, and then this book comes along and just justifies all of it, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's beyond amazing to me sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay, we didn't get out of the first paragraph here. Let's try to get going. Mike, would you take the next one, please?
Sure. Besides Havona circuit time, there is the Paradise Havona standard day and other time designations, which are determined on and are sent out from the seven Paradise satellites of the Infinite Spirit. The Paradise Havona standard day is based on the length of time required for the planetary abodes of the first or inner Havona circuit to complete one revolution around the Isle of Paradise. And though their velocity is enormous, owing to their situation between the dark gravity bodies and gigantic Paradise, it requires almost 1,000 years for these spheres to complete their circuit. You have unwittingly read the truth when your eyes rested on the statement, "A day is as 1,000 years with God, but as a watch in the night." One Paradise Havona day is just 7 minutes, 3 1/8 seconds less than 1,000 years of the present Urantia leap year calendar.
That's pretty exact, isn't it?
Very exact. Mm-hmm.
That's so awkward.
Pretty good.
I think they know what they're talking about there, don't you? I wouldn't want to argue that point anyway. Okay, so it takes 1,000 years of our time for the first Havona circuit to go all the way around Paradise. And that's what's considered one standard day of Havona time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you go spend a day on Paradise, it'll take you 1,000 years of our time. Be there for a little bit anyway. Okay.
It's a good thing we don't age.
Yeah, really. It's a real good thing. Real good thing.
Very good thing. Absolutely.
You know, it's kind of funny. Speaking of that, I had a doctor's appointment on the phone with my doctor at the VA because everything's been shut down for so long. And I hadn't seen her at the office for over 2 years. And I was joking with her. She says, "Well, I'd like to see you down in the office next time." And I said, "Well, I hate to tell you, I've gotten better looking. I've lost more of my hair."
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, so we do age. Anyway, okay. All right, let's go on to the next one. Diane, would you take the short paragraph there? Sure.
This Paradise Havona day is a standard time measurement for the seven super universes, although each maintains its own internal time standards.
So each circuit has a different time standard, okay? So as you go out from the first circuit all the way out to the seven, everyone gets longer, right? Because it takes longer to get around, all the way around. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right, Bill, would you take the next?
Sure. On the outskirts of this vast central universe, far out beyond the seventh belt of Havona World, there swirl an unbelievable number of enormous dark gravity bodies. These multitudinous dark masses are quite unlike other space bodies in many particulars. Even in form, they are very different. These dark gravity bodies neither reflect nor absorb light. They are non-reactive to physical energy light. And they so completely encircle and enshroud Havona as to hide it from the view of even nearby inhabited universes of time and space.
Okay, so I want to make a clarification on them. We talked about this a little bit last time, and what they're talking about here is these two circles, all right, that go the outer gravity belt and the inner gravity belt, right? And this is the side view, right? And remember, the inner one has circular, you know, they're arranged in circular formations. There's around like this, and the outer ones are more perpendicular. But there's something about these that I want to bring to y'all's attention. First, they do not absorb light. They are not like the dark, massive islands in space outside of in the super universes, okay, like black holes. You know what I'm saying? You know how a black hole will absorb light? Everything just gets absorbed into it completely. And they explain some of these that they're that what we're looking at many times is these dark islands in space that absorb light. Okay. And they're like a balance mechanism for gravity, universe gravity. Okay. That is not the same reaction that these dark islands of space that surround Havona, they don't react the same way. Neither reflect or absorb light, either one. It's totally non-reactive to light. Okay. So if we took a telescope and we shined it into this massive ball, it looks like this. Okay. The massive wall, the outer circuit. You see this? Dark space bodies. If we shined light into this, we would not get a reaction back from it because it does not reflect light, okay? It also does not absorb light, and that's important to know. This is not the same reaction that we would get from what we would call black holes, okay? And I'm going to make that clear. Because people can, you know, I've heard people talk about this over the years about in the Urantia book that these dark holes are
a black hole
circuit. And it's not, okay? The dark holes are something totally different. They're dark islands in space, okay? All right. Let's see.
Okay. I just read 14.
All right, let's go on to 15. Jane, would you take 15, please, there?
Yes. The great belt of dark gravity bodies is divided into two equal elliptical circuits by a unique space intrusion. The inner belt revolves counterclockwise. The outer revolves clockwise. These alternate directions of motion, coupled with the extraordinary mass of the dark bodies, so effectively equalize the lines of Havona gravity as to render the central universe a physically balanced and perfectly stabilized creation.
Okay, so these things help to keep gravity in check, if you think about it, right? Mm-hmm. Now, that makes you wonder if when we see these black holes, as we describe them as scientists, right? It makes you wonder if those are not part of the plan that work somewhat like these, only in a different manner, right? Because black holes do what? Absorb everything, don't they? Not only light, but they absorb energy and matter and all sorts of stuff. Now, we don't know. We can speculate where that stuff goes when it goes in this black hole, but we don't know for sure, do we? I mean, we're just speculating. So that may be some kind of recycling mechanism for the master physical crawlers or a dozen different types of beings to help maintain the universe in itself. Okay. People have thought that these black holes actually are a connecting point to an alternate universe, right? I mean, that's been speculated for years.
Yeah.
They may be not totally wrong. This alternate universe may be a universe on a different plane completely, right? We know that there's seven types of cosmic creation, though. So that alternate universe may be part of that. We don't know. They don't tell us.
Hey, Roger, right? I had a question.
Yeah.
What was said previous before, where circuit would go around and it would take 1,000 years?
Right. It goes actually in an oblong, actually, but yeah, it goes around it. Yeah.
I'm just trying to picture that. Like, if they're all stacked around, how can I determine, like, if they're all going around right at the same time, but how can I,
right.
How can I determine, okay, it's just one little sphere, right, going around. If you were
all, yeah, they're not little spheres, but yeah, they all go around. But
right,
the
right.
way you can tell they go around is because paradise is stationary.
Right. Right.
So if you looked in towards paradise from those, because they're the Havona circuit, there's no dark gravity bodies between you and paradise. But if you look from any of those spheres into paradise, your view would change because as you move, where you see in paradise would change.
Okay, thank you.
You understand that?
Yes.
You know, because paradise
doesn't. I got the picture.
Thank you.
And Bob, I have a question. Is the Urantian version of gravity the same as the Einsteinian version, or is it something completely different?
It's not completely different, Letch, but they do say in the book that there's a couple of things about Einstein's theories that are just wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
They're right up to a point, but some of the mathematics, of course, we know that Einstein had a problem with mathematics anyway, because his wife did most of the math, right? So so some of those are in error, but in general, most of it is pretty close to being right.
You know,
it's not 100%, but it's pretty close, right? Like the theory of relativity itself has got an error, got an issue, what they say. So they don't really, they kind of explain what the error is, but to be honest with you, I'm not as good a physicist to be able to figure exactly what they're telling me, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's similar then.
It's similar, yeah. Yeah, it's real close, though. Now, the folding of space and that sort of thing, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't, because they don't even mention that in the book whatsoever. So that theory may be debunked. I'm not sure. I tell you what, when we get to the mansion worlds, I'm sure we're going to have to study physics and we'll figure all that stuff out. You know?
Yeah.
Sure. But it's a mystery for right now. You know,
yeah.
Einstein had some great ideas, but like I said, wasn't any more perfect than any of us are. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a thing on TV the other day about a guy that kept Einstein's brain. And I thought to myself, how ridiculous can we get?
Yeah.
He's a human being just like we are. You know, he was a smart guy, but he was a human being.
I'm surprised he didn't need it.
That's why they keep on trying to examine the Shroud of Turin for the DNA of Jesus.
Yeah.
The only thing is, they'll get the DNA of his body, but not of his personality and his spirit.
Well, we already know that the Shroud of Turin is not the image of Christ. So,
right.
So, you know, we know that the burial clothes were literally thrown over a cliff after the resurrection so that no one would do exactly what they're trying to do, throughout the term. Right. So they didn't want evidence of Jesus's physical life left on the planet. And so they just literally destroyed it. And they said it was gone. So, and it says that in the book, and look that up. The Shroud of Turin, probably an ingenious thing by whom? Michelangelo? Is that who they think that may have done it? Who knows? But it's not Jesus. It's a good representation, though. Anyway, you look at it. So.
You should check out a website called UB in the News. It's fascinating what hell
has done. It's got the Shroud of Turin.
Most people would disagree with that, though, which I kind of do. And basically because there's nuclear kind of, there's something in there that's not supposed to be there. It's just incredible. And the original in the 70s, they did it. What they did was they took pieces. There's a piece that's sewn in the middle. They took a piece. They didn't take the original piece that was sewn, that was found, but that had been added. So the date was totally off and not accurate. But now... Yeah. It's just fascinating if you watch UB in the News.
Yeah, it's all interesting. But like I said, I don't believe that it's the image of Jesus.
And sure, I mean we all have our opinions and
yeah,
we have
that's right. You can believe anything you want to, right? That's freedom. That's it. You know. So anyway, it just seems to me it's kind of funny that they would go to so much trouble to disintegrate Jesus' body and not take care of any remnants that left, you know. I mean, that's what the midwayers do. So let's go on to the next one. Let's see. Let's would you take the next one, please?
Okay. The inner procession of dark gravity bodies is tubular in arrangement, consisting of three circular groupings. A cross section of this circuit would exhibit three concentric circles of about equal density. The outer circuit of dark gravity bodies is arranged perpendicularly, being 10,000 times higher than the inner circuit. The up and down diameter of the outer circuit is 50,000 times that of the transverse diameter.
Okay, so what are they talking about here? They're talking about the diameter of this, right? Mm-hmm. And that 50,000 times higher is the outer circuit. You see this?
Yeah.
So we got this and we got this. So these are 10,000 times higher than either. And then this is 50,000 times higher than this.
Oh.
You think there's any chance we could see past that?
Hardly.
Good wall right there.
Yeah, not likely. Right? All right. And remember, just because this is a circle doesn't mean it looks like a donut. These are supposed to be planets lined up in order around in three concentric circles. So this really should look like billions and billions of planets. Okay. And the same way with this, or these dark ion space bubbles.
Right.
Just a representation. Okay. I think you're next.
Sure. The intervening space which exists between these two circuits of gravity bodies is ununique, and that nothing like it is to be found elsewhere in all the wide universe. This zone is characterized by enormous wave movements of an up and down nature and is permeated by tremendous energy activities of an unknown order.
Okay, so these two circuits and these bodies is unique in the universe. Those are not the same as these black holes we keep talking about, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the point I want to make here. These gravity bodies are unique and they're not found anywhere else. All right. So they're not the same thing as the black holes or islands of space that's been around in the universe. Okay. Those are different. All right. Two different animals. A lot of things out there that's just a mystery. All right. Let's see here. Ed, would you take the next one, please?
Sure. In our opinion, nothing like the dark gravity bodies of the central universe will characterize the future evolution of the outer space levels. We regard these alternate processions of stupendous gravity balancing bodies as unique in the master universe.
So they don't even, they're of opinion, they don't even think these things will ever be used outside the central universe, the master unit. It will not be in the master universe.
So their purpose, you just imagine, what would they be if they weren't there? Would there be such a pull of gravity in paradise that it would make the super universes able to create them? I mean, they have to have something balanced. I assumably just said it. Stupendous gravity balancing body. That's their function.
Yeah, that's their function.
Right.
That must be. It's just fascinating.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I'm of the opinion if they weren't there, the seven super universes would just be sucked in, you know, like mass in mass. Yeah, like a vacuum cleaner would suck all the seven super universes and maybe even the outer space level. Because we're talking about a gravity force that's not like anything we can even conceive of. It's not like the linear gravity around the planets. They tell us that. So,
hey Roger, I had a question.
It wouldn't have an effect on mindal gravity. Say gravity.
No.
Mindal gravity, infinite spirit, spirit gravity.
No.
You know, it has to do with that physical.
It's just the physical. That's right. It's the physical gravity of paradise, that paradise circuit, right? All right. Okay.
Oh, hey, Roger, I had a question.
Yeah.
What would be your response when somebody asks you, do you believe that God tests us?
No. Not on any level.
Do you believe that life is a test?
No, not on any level.
Okay, because in this paper it says, you know, life being a test, and I was wondering if you could separate the two in terms of...
No, life is not a test. Life is an experience. Okay, there's a difference. Everything in this life is experiential. We're put here to experience a reality of a finite order of being, okay? And we build on that experience that takes us into the Marantia type being, okay? But it's not a test. God does not test his creatures in any way, shape, form, or fashion. Okay? He just doesn't do it. That's the Old Testament stuff coming out. You know? Because we've been taught that over and over and over again. You know? It's the story of Job, right? And how Job lost everything, you know, from the Old Testament. That's a perfect example. God does not do that.
So when it says on Urantia, you pass through a short and intense test during your initial life, a material existence. That's what I was asking because...
No, the test they're talking about is survival. Okay. Though, Tim.
Experiencing life is what it is.
Yeah, it's experiencing life. The test is whether you survive. Okay, if you want to call that a test. But God does not put that out there, does he? That's not something that God does, test us. He has set us up in a material existence and gives us the opportunity to continue on through eternity. Does he not? So, and you think of that, it's all set up. So if you think about it, that's not a test. That's an experience, right?
Okay.
We have challenges.
We have challenges, right? Good. That's perfect, Millie.
God did not give us challenges. They happen in our life. It's part of our existence.
Right, right. So it's an act of free will versus...
It's an act of free will. Stuff just happens, right?
You come to something and it either challenges you or you just turn your back on it and go the other way. You can accept the challenge or not.
Right, because my mom was asking me, she's like, does God test us? And at first, you know, I was being really logical in terms of, well, we really make our own choices and by our actions. But then she kind of didn't get it. So I said, yes, mom.
You know, but if that's the way she relates to you, it's fine. You know, you're not misleading her. You know, we can't always be 100% perfect when we teach people. You have to bring it to their level. You know?
Religious, so it's kind of like...
There are.
Let me give you an example. When you get up tonight in the middle of the night and the lights are off, if you walk through your living room and you stub your toe on one of your pieces of furniture, okay, that's because the lights are off and you're stooping, you walk through the living room.
God didn't
put that piece of furniture in your
path. I know, and I started out like that, but...
Yeah.
I just said, yeah, because she gets a lot of you know, outside influence too by this Christian woman that's also helping us out. And I just said, yeah. Okay, thank you.
In the case of your mother, there are a lot of people who are not ready for this information.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Even though there are bits and pieces, they ask your opinion, you can give them your opinion. Your opinion comes from the Urantia book.
Sure. Maybe
their opinion comes from the Old Testament. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are people who are not ready.
Well, I started out, like I said, and it kind of didn't go good. She gave me this look and I said, yeah, Mom, you're right.
Yeah, you did so good,
Pam. Thank you. That's why I'm just asking. Like, hey.
All right. Mike, could you take the next one, please?
It's like my wife. My wife asked me, I want you to give me an answer from the Bible. But I know a different answer from the Urantia book.
Wow.
Yeah.
Roger, can I ask... Yes. A question relative to what Tim is asking.
Yeah.
I'm reflecting on what Tim is discussing, you know, and I'm thinking, all right, so God does not put us through the test of whatever we experience in life.
Right. But
do we put ourselves?
All the time.
All the time, right?
All the time. We put ourselves through tests constantly.
Because quite often you really have to reflect in everyday living.
Mm-hmm.
Am I doing the will of God
or not? Am I
following my way?
Right.
And test every time.
Mm-hmm. It
surrender
is.
To say, go ahead.
May I say something?
Yes, you may.
The mind of man. It's the battleground between two F words in the English language. And those F words are fear and faith.
And faith.
Yeah.
Whichever one wins, that is according to your own decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. Free will, right? It's free will.
Free will.
And that comes back to the experiential thing, Jane. We constantly test ourselves and we like to blame God on everything, right? I mean, that's the way we were brought up, right? We want to blame God on every little thing that happens, but God has nothing to do with most of the things we need to concentrate on are trying to do God's will. And the way we know that it's God's will in our life, it's based on something very, very simple, and that's love.
That's correct. You're absolutely 100% correct.
Good answer,
Roger. That's the key, right? If you base everything on love, then you're 99.9% of the way your decisions are going to be God's will, right?
Amen.
It will be. All right. Sure. All right. Mike, would you take the next one, spirit beings?
One more point. It's like Bill said, truth, beauty, and goodness.
And goodness. That's right.
Yeah. You got it.
Number two, the Constitution of Havona.
No, 2-1.
I'm sorry?
Where are you at? I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. The Constitution of Havona.
Okay,
ignore me, Mike. Ignore me.
Constitution of Havona. Spirit beings do not dwell in nebulous space. They do not inhabit ethereal worlds. They're domiciled on actual spheres of a material nature, worlds just as real as those on which mortals live. The Havona worlds are actual and literal, albeit their literal substance differs from the material organization of the planets of the seven superuniverse.
So they're just every being dwells on a planet, right? We don't float around in the clouds and we don't float around in space, no matter what level. All right.
So that word ethereal worlds is what you're talking about? It's just a planet.
It's just ethereal. Well, ethereal world would be a non-existent world, one made of non-substance.
Okay.
Right? They do not inhabit ethereal worlds. There aren't such thing as ethereal worlds. All worlds are made of either two atoms, or a combination of two things, or a combination of three things. That's the only two combinations. We'll see this in this next slide down. Okay. And that's the only choices you have. Okay. So all planets are made of one of these two things. All the Havona worlds are made of these three things, A, B, and C. Okay. Triada. All the local universes, seven super universes, are made up of electrons and protons, and they come to 100 atoms. Okay. So that's the two choices we have, right? There's one outside of that, and that is paradise energy, which is absolutum, which we'll get to in a minute. Okay. All right. So every being is on a planet of some type, whether it's a three atom system or a two atom system, right? Or two molecule system, I should say. Okay. Diane, would you take the next one, the physical reality?
The physical realities of Havona represent an order of energy organization radically different from any prevailing in the evolutionary universes of space. Havona energies are threefold. Super universe units of energy matter contain a twofold energy charge. Although one form of energy exists in negative and positive phases, the creation of the central universe is threefold, trinity. The creation of a local universe directly is twofold by a creator sun and a creative spirit.
So that means that all of us human beings are twofold in nature, are we not?
Yeah.
Because we were created by a creator son and a creative mother spirit, right? So we're twofold in nature, not a trinity being, right? If you talk about any being that's a trinity order being, like a trinity son, then they are what? They're a threefold being, right? Because they were created by all three. All right, let's go on. Well, Bill, would you? Yeah.
Yeah. The picture up there where the Trinity Order beings are, in the top, it says to the right, absolutum.
Absolutum, that's correct.
Yeah.
That's okay. The Trinity Order of Energy.
Trinity Order of Energy, okay, thank right. you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you want me to go ahead and read the next one?
Yeah, would you read the next one? Before you do, let me clarify something too. Notice here it talks about just the energy itself, and the paradise energy is called Manada. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
The Havona energy, why would that be Manada? Because Manada would be one, would it not?
Yeah.
That's what mana it means, you know, it's Latin. Okay, Manada. Havona energy is triada. That's three, right? And then local universe power is gravata. It's two part. Okay. So that's what that's about. All right. All right. Go on with the next.
The material of Havona consists of the organization of exactly 1,000 basic chemical elements and the balanced function of the seven forms of Havona energy. Each of these basic energies manifests seven phases of excitation so that the Havona native respond to 49 differing sensation stimuli. In other words, viewed from a purely physical standpoint, the natives of the central universe possess 49 specialized forms of sensation. The Mirantia senses are 70. And the higher spiritual orders of reaction response vary in different types of beings from 70 to 210. Wow.
Okay, so you think you got trouble now with our seven senses? What do you do to the mansion worlds and then your senses goes up to 70? Okay, think we're in trouble? Probably so, right? And then when we get to the higher spiritual orders, then we get 210.
Well, Roger, we won't be able to play poker because we'll know everybody's numbers.
Right. It's also interesting in this paragraph that it talks about the seven forms of Havona Energy. Did y'all catch that? So it says the material of Havona consists of organizations exactly 1,000 basic chemical elements. So if we go back up here, Havona atoms are 1,000, right? Our atoms are 100, okay? But quite a bit of difference there, right?
By the way, what is our chemical number up to on the scale that we have?
I don't remember what the latest thing is, 140-something, I think.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard anything other than that.
Yeah, this is not talking. This is not the chemical chart they're talking about here, right? This is the basis of the atom, right? So we're going to have more things on our chemical chart than we have as far as the 100 atoms because they're variations of the same thing. You follow me?
Okay. So, Roger, question.
I had to study this one time. I spent 3 days trying to figure this out. Trying to match up the chemical chart to the 100 atoms, and you will never be able to do that. Okay. All right.
So yeah. They're basically not, they're just telling us, hey, there's 7 forms of Havona energy. We're not going to show the entire calculate, you know, the formulas are just.
No.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Way outside what they're trying to teach us, right? All right. Millie, would you take the next one, please? Millie, you still out there?
Need to turn my mic on.
Okay.
None of the physical beings of the central universe would be visible to Urantium. Neither would any of the physical stimuli of those faraway worlds excite a reaction in your gross sense organs. If a Urantium mortal could be transported to Havona, he would there be deaf, blind, and utterly lacking in all other sense reactions. He could only function as a limited self-conscious being, deprived of all environmental stimuli and all reactions thereto.
So we don't have the senses to be able to detect any of this, do we? So if we was transported there, it wouldn't do us any good, right? Not at all. All right. Let's try to get another paragraph here. In here, Letch, would you take the next one, please?
There's 5. There are numerous physical phenomena and spiritual reactions transpiring in the central creation, which are unknown on worlds such as Urantia. The basic organization of a threefold creation is wholly unlike that of the twofold constitution of the created universes of time and space.
So the way things are organized in these worlds is totally different than ours. So if we were there, we wouldn't have anything to relate to because our constitution is twofold and their constitution is threefold, right? It's just the way it is. And I've just run out of time. So let's take this up on the next time. Say a little prayer and we'll have a little discussion just for a minute afterwards after I stop the recording. Father, thank you for bringing us together tonight. Thank you for this insight of tonight. Thank you for these questions from everyone that we're learning from each other and we're experiencing this book even more and more each day. We thank you for being with us. We pray this in the Son of your Son, Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. Amen.
Amen.